Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Ron's Amazing Stories, where we play tales to take you away from today. It is a good old Western roundup this week.
This town ain't big enough for the two of us.
I never said it was. We have a Gunsmoke episode, and it doesn't get any more Western than that.
Sure. That sounds fine.
Also this week, Mason from Dallas has a run-in with coyotes. Emily faces a farmhouse fire ghost, and Greg Surratt responds to a previous story that we called Impossible.
Amazing!
Yeah, it really is. Now, let's get down to it, philosophically, with this 5-minute mystery.
Another 5-minute mystery.
This 5-minute mystery is being brought to you by Immanuel Kant. He was the famous philosopher who once said, "Thoughts without content are empty. Intuitions without concepts are blind." How does this relate to our story? How does anything relate to a 5-minute mystery?
So you're making out all right, Molly, with your husband in the army.
And why not, Inspector? Women are no weaklings. I can run this garage as good as any man now.
Yeah, the next thing you know, the women will be taking over the police departments.
Yeah, just a minute. Hello, George's Garage. Molly George speaking. Huh? Yeah, sure, I can handle it. Sure, be right over.
Someone broken down?
Worse than that, Inspector. A car just went over that 70-foot cliff at the Globe Tunnel.
The Globe Tunnel? Hey, that must be some wreck. I'll follow you out in my car, Molly. This might prove interesting.
Inspector, I've never been so scared in my life. My brother Lester was driving the car, and he didn't get out.
Hey, how about you men giving me some help here so I can get this car towed off the road?
Right with you, Molly.
When are you getting the tow truck here and pull forward, slow-like?
I'll do it.
Okay. Now, edge it forward.
Just a minute, Mills, until I release the emergency brake on this wreck. Oh, it's not the emergency brake. The gear shifts in reverse. Man. Okay.
There you are, Mrs. George.
How did your brother happen to run off this cliff, Mills?
We were having a little argument, Inspector, and Lester didn't see the curve until too late.
Must have been going pretty fast.
Well, we were going about 50 miles an hour. Lester yanked back on the emergency brake hard, but it didn't do any good.
The brake must have been defective. There's no skid marks.
Oh, I've got no faith in emergency brakes. Never use them. If Lester hadn't taken so much time with his, he could have jumped, too.
Then you jumped from this speeding car and didn't get hurt?
It was a miracle. When I saw Lester had lost control, I opened my door and jumped. The car ran along the edge of the embankment for about 20 feet and then fell over. It rolled and bounced down over those rocks. It was horrible.
Yes, I can see the tracks here along the edge of the cliff.
I'm taking it on in, Inspector, okay?
Sure, I'll see you later with the coroner.
If Lester hadn't trusted his brakes so much, he'd be here now. But no, the poor devil never even had a chance.
I'll say he didn't have a chance. Not when you, Mr. Mills, had murdered him.
Were you as fast as the inspector in seeing through Mills' story? We'll see in a moment, but first...
What a deep story. Women's equality, murder, and car carnage. Amazing. I believe Mills' story for the most part, but I did catch the flaw, and it might be enough to put this guy away. All they need is some motive. Immanuel Kant might have put it this way: you can't go forward if you're stuck in reverse.
Now, back to the story and its unusual solution.
Mills, the slip you made and the slip that'll send you to the lethal chamber was your habit of always parking a car in gear because of your fear of emergency brakes not holding. You'll remember I had to take your car out of reverse before it could be towed. Yet no one had been in the car since the accident. Mills, you killed your brother earlier, drove here to the cliff, parked the car on the edge just enough to make it off balance. Then to make sure the car didn't move until you were clear of it, you put the car in reverse, got out, wobbled the car until it toppled over the embankment.
That reasoning is stupid.
It was stupid of you, Mills, to forget that a car can't speed forward with the gears in reverse.
See how I did that? I used philosophy to solve a 5-minute mystery. I even think Emmanuel would be proud. The real question is this. How in the world did Mills push the car over the cliff with the car in reverse? It's a good thing we don't have to worry about stuff like that. This 5-minute mystery was brought to you by Emmanuel Kant. I have to say that we have a response about the story my brother wrote for us in episode number 332, Impossible. It was the one about the strange suspended aircraft in the New Mexican sky. The response comes from Greg Surratt, who is also from the Land of Enchantment. He writes, "Hi Ron. First, I love your show, which I found after your appearance on Jim Harold's Campfire. So glad that you're now a part of my podcast pantheon. I have an explanation regarding the strange sight that your brother beheld when returning from Sirocco, New Mexico to Rio Rancho. I am also a resident of New Mexico, having resided in Albuquerque for the last 23 years. Albuquerque is the site for Kirtland Air Force Base, which is home to the branch's 58th Special Operations Wing. This unit flies the CV-22 Osprey aircraft, which are airplane-helicopter hybrids with large bodies which could be confused for tankers. The Ospreys have large swiveling props which allow them to fly like normal planes when rotated forward and hover like helicopters when pointed upward. For some time, Boeing, the manufacturer of the Osprey, has been testing a roll-on, roll-off aerial refueling kit, which gives the V-22 the ability to refill other aircraft. It's very possible that your brother witnessed this kit being used to refuel a helicopter, although it is certainly odd that the operation would be taking place over an interstate. For what it's worth, that's what could have rendered the seemingly impossible possible for your brother that day in the Land of Enchantment. Keep the amazing coming, Greg Surratt." Well, Greg, as for me, I like to think your explanation is the right one. I like to have answers rather than what-ifs. I sent your email to my brother, and this is his response. "Thanks. What a great letter, and it certainly does make sense. My thanks to Greg. But as he says, why stage this directly over I-25 and so dangerously low? One other point. I forgot to date the story. This happened in 1998. I wonder if that makes a difference. Either way, it was still a jaw-dropping sight." Well, Jim, no, actually it doesn't make a difference. I did a bit of research, and this is what I came up with. The Bell Boeing V-22 Osprey is an American multi-mission tilt-rotor military aircraft with both vertical takeoff and landing. It is designed to combine the functionality of a conventional helicopter with the long-range, high-speed cruise performance of a turboprop aircraft. Now, this is the important part. It took its first test flight in 1989 and was put into regular service in 2007. This means that what you could have witnessed was during its testing phase. What better way to test it than at Kirtland Air Force Base? Either way, I think we have to continue to label this one as a head-scratcher. My thanks to you, Greg, and to my brother for writing in. I've been getting quite a few Facebook friend requests. Please don't take my non-acceptance of this personally. To Jill, if you're still listening, I did not ignore you. Please follow me at my Facebook fan page, which is open to everyone. When I began the podcast, I made the mistake of using my personal page as the home page for Ron's Amazing Stories. It wasn't until much later that I learned about support pages. You can follow the podcast at www.facebook.com/Ron's Amazing Stories or just search for Ron's Amazing Stories on Facebook. By the way, I was told recently that we lost about 1,000 followers during a recent sweep by Twitter. If you were one of those, I'm very sorry about that, but it was beyond my control. If you follow me again on Twitter, I promise to follow you back. Again, this was beyond my control, and quite frankly, I've never banned or deleted anyone. Even that guy that told me that I was a story-stealing hack who sounds like Mike Wallace. Whatever that means. And now, these are your stories.
These are your stories, sent by you, for you.
As I said at the top, this week's theme is a Western roundup. But here's the thing. I get stories and hold on to them. Then I get to group them together when I have a theme. Pretty cool idea, I think. Our first story comes from Mason Henry Blue. First, let me say I didn't believe the name either until I had the pleasure of talking to Mason on the phone. He is about as real and down-home country as a man can get. He declined to come on the program, but he wanted to tell us a story. Mason said that he heard the podcast we had some time ago with author Alan Day. He loved Alan's interview so much that he wanted to tell one of his tales to match. You can listen to that interview with Alan Day in episode number 166, The Horse Lover. But for now, here is Mason's story as he told it to me. My name is Mason Henry Blue. My friends call me Buckles. I got the name during my rodeo years. I earned a few of them a time or two. My story comes from the late 1940s. I was a young man, just about 18 years old. My folks had just given me the get out or take over the farm speech. I chose to get out. I began working at a place near Dallas called the South Fork Ranch. My job in those early years was to clean the bunkhouse, wash clothes, and help the cook. Later, I became the handyman and protector. There were two predators there that had to be dealt with, coyotes and spiders. The spiders were recluse and black widows. The coyotes, well, they were just trouble. One morning, Beth, the owner's wife, told me to get up in the hills and stop a pack that had been taking her chickens at night. In those days, there were a bounty on the critters, so I was pleased at the chance for some extra cash. I loaded up with some traps, my long gun, supplies, and off I went. I made camp along a creek in the nearby hills. It was winter, and I knew two things about coyotes. They need food and water. Chickens for food and the creek for water. That first day was all about setting up camp and fixing any broken traps. Day two was finding their trails and setting the traps. That night I heard their howls, so I knew I was in the right place. The next day I checked on my traps, and most of them had been tripped and the meat was gone. I almost expected a note from the coyotes saying, "Thanks for the grub, lunkhead." I decided these guys were going to require the night hunter. I found the trail most likely used to get at the chickens, built a sort of a tree perch, and set myself up for the night. It wasn't too long before I fell asleep. That's when the growls began. I grabbed my flashlight, and sure enough, right below me was a pack of hungry dogs all looking up at me like I was some kind of dinner. I reached for my rifle and was surprised when it was gone. I flashed the light around a bit and found it right down there leaning against the tree where I had left it. I slapped my forehead and was glad that coyotes can't climb trees. It was a long and cold dark night. I had nothing to do, so I had me a conversation with them yelps. We talked about the wrongs of eating chickens and where they could find a large burrow of rabbits. The pups arrived with their mamas, and it got to be a big old camp meeting. Except I was the preacher, and they were my flock. I must have fallen asleep again, because when I woke up, they's all gone. I went back to camp, and it came as no surprise that it was torn to pieces. Every speck of food was gone. I packed up, tucked my tail between my legs, and headed home. When the missus asked about the trip, I just said I had a long talk with them and they won't be bothering us anymore. Funny thing was, they never did. Mason Henry Blue from Dallas. Well, Mason, what a great story, and I want to thank you for sharing it with us. To Mason, I say, I think you should have told your story yourself, but I hope I did it some justice. Our second tale comes from Ron's Amazing Stories Past. Mason's story reminded me of this tale, so I dug it out of the archives, and I replay it now as I did back in episode number 186 called Universe. It aired on January 13th, 2015.
What's that, you say?
I received a tweet from @whatsthat, which led to an email, which led to a phone call. I had the great pleasure to spend the next hour or so on the phone with Miss Reese. She was a wonderful gal with many great stories. I talked her into sharing one with us, and she chose to have me write and read her story. Her hope is to take her many family tales and turn them into a book. Now, I support that 100%, and so here's my contribution to the project, the Emily Reese story. I hope I do it the justice it deserves. It was the summer of 1963. My parents had left me with my Grammy for the mild months so they could take their dream trip together and tour Europe. The idea of spending the whole summer there was a thrill, to say the least. My Grammy owned a small cherry farm in Northern California. She had horses, rabbits, goats, and even a real reindeer. It would just be me and my grandmother, Ellen. Of course, she had help with the farm. There was Chuck, the foreman, and his two workers, Eli, and a man they just called Dez. The first few weeks there were just how you would imagine. I got to do pretty much anything I wanted to do, which for a 9-year-old, is a lot. I did have my chores, which were actually quite fun. I fed the chickens, goats, and rabbits, and once a week had to muck out the cages and pen. But even that wasn't too bad. Grammy did all the cooking. We would have one sit-down meal per day at 6 p.m., which everyone attended. The morning meal was just us, and lunch was whatever you could find, whenever you wanted it. The farm was beautiful. It was set on a hill with a winding road leading up to the main house. A large red barn was on the east side of the hill, and it also served as the bunkhouse for Chuck, Dez, and Eli. There was a stable, general yard, and a few storage buildings scattered about. The whole thing overlooked one of the largest cherry fields in the county. It was nearly 30 acres. The farmhouse itself was very old. Grammy told me that it was built by German immigrants in the late 1880s. My grandfather bought the place in 1940. It had been completely abandoned and was in terrible shape. He rebuilt it brick by brick, stone by stone, and it took him nearly 10 years to complete. To this day, no one knows why the family left the house. All that is known is that there had been a fire, they sold out, left in the middle of the night, and never were heard from again. To the west was a vast forest with many trails to explore. Since a little girl could get lost, I was not permitted to go too far, but even with the restrictions, I never ran out of places to explore and ride my pony, Mary. Of course, I had friends. The Jargons had a farm nearby, and they had 2 kids. Also, town was only 3 miles away, so I had no shortage of kids wanting to come over and stay the night. I had my own room in the top of the main house. It was the attic, really, but was my first choice to stay. The main window opened and gave you a view of the orchard below and the lights of the big city in the far-off distance. I spent many a night sitting in that window with my legs dangling outside, dreaming of the wonders only a 9-year-old could think of. I never wanted it to end. It was the day after my 10th birthday that the trouble started. That night I had a friend over, and she woke me up in the middle of the night screaming. Grammy was quick to be there, but could not comfort the frightened little girl. All she could say was that the dark man grabbed her and shook her real hard. There was no sleeping after that, and we had to take her home. When we got back, I was so frightened, I went to bed with my Grammy. The next morning was so beautiful, and all was forgotten. We even got a call from our guest saying that she was fine and had no idea what had gotten into her. The next few weeks passed without incident, and I even went back to my old room. One night, I woke up and I couldn't breathe. I tried to scream, but nothing came out. I looked around the room and could see that it was on fire. Standing in the middle of the flames was a misshaped thing. I could feel the heat, the hate, and the fear. I wanted to run, but I couldn't. I wanted to scream, do anything, but all I could do was whimper. Finally, the door to the room burst open, and standing there was Eli. He ran to me, grabbed me, and the two of us got out of the room. We flew down the stairs and into the kitchen. I was sitting at the table when Grammy arrived. She heard the noise and had come to investigate. I was crying, but was able to tell her what happened. She ran upstairs and found the room completely clear. No fire, no man. Even Eli was gone. My grandmother rang the dinner bell outside the door. Within a minute, all 3 men were standing there. Eli swore he'd been sleeping and not been in the main house at all. Was it a dream? I don't know. It felt so real. The next morning, I moved out of that room into the one next to Grammy's. For the next few nights, we both heard strange noises coming from the attic. But soon they faded, and the rest of my summer was spent happily and peacefully. Oh, I never went into the attic again. Miss Reese told me that her grandmother lived on that farm until she passed in 1994. It was sold to a family of German immigrants. Connection? Coincidence? Who can say? I do know that I, for one, believe this one, and so would you if you heard Miss Reese tell it. If you want to tell your tale on Ron's amazing story, all it takes is letting me hear it. You can come on the show and tell it in your own words, or I'll be happy to write it and read it for you, just like I did for Emily Reese. Many thanks to her for sharing this one.
Our
Our main story, as promised this week, comes from the OTR series Gunsmoke. We're gonna hear one of my all-time favorite episodes. In fact, the show's writer, John Meston, thought enough of it that he adapted it to television and it became the pilot for the new show. John Wayne himself introduced that debut episode and its lead actor, Jim Arness. The plot is about a gunslinger who goats people into showdowns. Somehow, he gets the upper hand on Matt, nearly killing him. The story is called Matt Gets It, and it first aired on the radio October 10, 1952. 1 year later, on September 10, 1955, it aired on television.
Around Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gun smoke, starring William Conrad. Transcribed story of the violence that moved west with young America. And the story of a man who moved with it.
I'm that man, Matt Dillon, United States Marshal. The first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful and a little lonely.
Dillon.
You know, it's 5 miles to Fort Dodge and 5 miles back, Chester. Figuring the time you were gone, you traveled about 2 miles an hour.
Well, Major Honeyman kept me waiting almost 3 hours, Mr. Dillon.
Well, why didn't you leave the papers with the first sergeant?
You told me to deliver them to the major.
Well, I should have explained, I guess.
Well, that's all right. Me and the first sergeant enjoyed a couple of beers at the Sutler's.
Oh. Well, I trust Major Honeyman didn't mind waiting.
Him? Oh, no, sir. It was me, Mr. Dillon. You see, when I got there...
It's all right. It doesn't matter. It's all right, Chester. It's all right.
Wait.
After all, it's a pretty hot day.
Oh, hot ain't nothing like it. You know, sir, I was wondering all the way back. Do you think maybe someday they'll invent a way to kind of cover up the sun a little?
What? Who's they, Chester?
Well, I don't know. The people that works on stuff like that. Them fellas that goes to school and all. You think they will?
Well, I think any man that went to school very long ought to have more sense than to try to cover up the sun.
Oh, well, I didn't mean all the way up. I meant just part of it.
Oh, well, I can think of one man that's already done that.
Really? Who's that?
A fella called John B. Stetson.
Oh, now, Mr. Dillon, I'm serious.
So am I, Chester.
Marshal Dillon?
Ah, hello.
Jim Hill, Marshal, from Amarillo.
How do you do? This is Chester Proudfoot.
Chester.
Glad to know you.
I'm looking for a man, Marshal. Fella called Dan Grapp. You know him?
No, never heard of him. Have you, Chester?
Ain't no Dan Grapp around here.
Well, he's coming here. Told one of his girls in Amarillo he was. I'll wait for him.
Well, what do you want him for, Hill?
Murder.
Murder?
He shot 3 men in Amarillo. 2 of them in a fair fight, but he made a mistake with the last one. Grapp didn't know it, but the man wasn't even armed.
A friend of yours?
No, I didn't know him. Some gambler.
Yeah. Then why are you after Grapp?
I thought maybe you'd heard of me, Marshal. I'm sheriff of Amarillo.
Oh, I see. Well, it's been a long time since I've been in Amarillo.
It's no quieter than it ever was. But it'll get worse if I don't stop men like Dan Grapp, no matter how far they run.
You said he didn't know the man wasn't armed. Well, why would he be running?
He found out after he'd shot him. They say it shamed him killing an unarmed man. One thing about Grapp, Marshal, he ain't no coward.
Yeah. But he enjoys shooting people.
He's a gunman. And I'll tell you something, Marshal. Dan Gratt ain't well known, but he's about as handy with a gun as anybody in the state of Texas. Men who watched him say he's the fastest they ever saw, bar none.
Well, I'll help you take him, Sheriff.
I only come here to tell you what I was doing in Dodge, Marshal. I don't need no help.
Well, he's just a murderer. Why take a chance?
I'm pretty good myself, Marshal. I ain't afraid of him.
Oh, okay.
And if you run into him first, save him for me. I'd hate to have made the ride up here for nothing. I'm staying at the Dodge house, Marshal, if you want to find me. So long.
So long.
Mr. Dillon, I don't quite make him out.
Oh, why not, Chester?
Well, I mean not wanting you to help him, if it's true what he says about this Dan Gratt.
The sheriff's like a lot of men, Chester. He's too proud, too confident in himself. You'll get him in trouble someday.
Yes, sir.
It's a mistake some gunmen make, too.
You mean like Dan Gratt?
Oh, I don't care about Dan Gratt, Chester. It's Sheriff Hill I'm worried for.
Come over.
Oh, he's waiting at the bar for a friend of his.
Man or woman?
A man. He owes Chester some money, he said.
Then they won't be friends for long.
That's only $2.
I lost friends for less money than that.
You must have lived among mighty poor people.
Any camp I've been in, most of the citizens went from rich to poor a couple of times every month.
Well, that beats working for a living.
You believe that. Why don't you take up gambling, Matt?
You know, sometimes I think that might be a good idea.
Well, it's safer than what you're doing now.
Instead of being safe all I wanted, I'd take up raising hogs and potatoes, Kitty.
That's about what I figured.
They told me at the bar you was Marshal Dillon.
Yeah, that's right.
I just rode into town, Marshal. You're the first man I wanted to see.
Well, what about?
Like this, Marshal. I'm kind of free and easy in my ways. Sometimes people don't understand.
Understand what?
That they shouldn't try to stop me.
Well, nobody's stopping you, stranger. You do whatever you want. Short of breaking the law.
It's the law I'm talking about, Marshal.
All right, say it plain, mister.
Sure. I get in a fight. I kill somebody. I don't want no trouble about it. That plain enough?
Where are you from?
Texas.
Amarillo.
How do you know?
The sheriff, Jim Hill, he's here waiting for you. Gratt.
Where is he?
I don't know. He'll probably be in here later. Why don't you wait?
No. I'll find him. And after I do, we'll talk some more, Marshal.
Gratt.
What?
About breaking the law here. That includes resisting arrest.
You explain it to me later, Marshal.
Chester.
Yes, sir, Mr. Dillon.
Chester, go find Sheriff Hill and tell him Dan Gratt's in town. The least we can do is warn him.
Okay, sir.
Where's your gun, Chester?
My gun? Oh, it must be over at the office. I'll go right over and get it.
You better find the sheriff first. And hurry.
Yes, sir. I'll try the dog house.
Can't you stop it, Matt?
I can't interfere with another lawman, Kitty. I offered to help, but he wouldn't have it.
Why not? You too proud?
Yeah, that's right, Kitty. He's too proud.
You think Gratt's gonna kill him?
Well, I think he'll try.
You don't like not being able to do anything about it, do you, Matt?
No, Kitty, I don't. Yeah, you stay in here, Kitty.
Gratt found him, Mr. Dillon. Right there in the street, he yelled at him, and then he shot him as soon as he turned around and got set. Oh, that Gratt's the one fastest man I ever saw. I mean, Well, he's just terrible.
Keep out of the way, Chester. He's waiting for me.
Yes, sir.
What's the matter, Marshal? I break one of your laws?
You just killed a man, Gret.
He ain't the first man I've killed.
Jim Hill was a lawman. He was here to arrest you for murdering an unarmed man in Amarillo.
I didn't know he was unarmed.
Your mistake.
I'd have killed him anyway. I can kill anybody. Like you. Right now. Marshal, how easy it is. How is he, Doc?
Well, I can't tell yet, Chester.
Oh, Doc.
He was hit in the head as well as the arm, Chester, and he's still unconscious. We'll know what damage it did when he comes to, and not before. I've done everything I can for him.
Yeah, I know, Doc. Of course you have.
Another fraction of an inch, he'd be dead now. As it is, he may be all right in 10 days. Well, who knows? I don't.
Brad hit him first shot. I could tell. Mr. Dillon still got one off. I don't know why I had to miss him.
Of course he missed him, Chester. Matt was out on his feet when he fired that shot.
He dropped his gun before he fell.
And who wouldn't with 2 bullets in his arm?
Is it ruined, Doc? His arm?
No, it's not ruined. It'll be stiff for a while.
Doc?
Mm-hmm.
If I'd have tried to kill Grat, if I'd have had my gun, I was going to pick up Mr. Dillon's and do it, but Grat kicked it away from me.
It's a good thing he did.
I wanted to kill him.
I know, Chester. I know how you felt.
It's a terrible thing watching a man like Mr. Dillon get shot that way, Doc.
Of course it is, Chester, but killing Grat won't help him now.
Well, if Mr. Dillon dies, I'll kill him. I'll get me a shotgun and I'll kill him. I'll blow him in half, and we'll see how doggone fast he is.
No, calm down, Chester. You mustn't get it. I tell you, go put some coffee on the stove right over there, yeah? We'll both need it before the night's out.
Okay, Doc. But I sure hate to think of Grat standing around at some bar bragging how he shot down Mr. Dillon. Bartender, give me some whiskey.
Coming up.
You're Dan Grat, huh?
I don't know you, mister.
No offense, I heard your name, Grat. Everybody's talking about you.
What are they saying?
How you shot the marshal and all. You're pretty fast, Grat.
The man to beat me ain't found a father yet.
How come you didn't kill the marshal?
He's still alive?
They say he is.
Whiskey. What's this, bartender?
Shot of whiskey.
I said I wanted some whiskey.
Well, that's whiskey.
Don't fool with me. Get me the bottle.
This here's Dan Grat, bartender. Fellow that shot Marshal Dillon tonight.
You didn't say you wanted the bottle.
Get it.
Come on.
What's the matter with him? You a friend of the marshal?
Some is, some ain't.
How about you?
Me? I don't care one way or t'other.
Make up your mind.
Well, sure, Grat. I'm on your side. I wouldn't be talking to you if I wasn't.
I guess I got some more convincing to do around here about who's top dog.
Not me, Grat. You don't have to convince me.
Then act like it.
Well, sure. I was asking how come you didn't kill the marshal.
He dropped his gun when I hit him in the arm.
Why'd that stop you?
I don't shoot unarmed men.
You don't?
What?
I said, don't you?
Your arm, mister.
Now, Grant, I ain't done nothing.
I don't like your talk. You know about me, don't you? That gambler should have had a gun in Amarillo.
I don't know what you're saying, Grant. I don't know nothing about you.
Take out your gun, mister. Go on, take it out.
No, Grant, no.
Do what I tell you.
But not me. No, I didn't.
Your time's up.
I didn't...
Hello, Doc.
Oh, Matt will be glad to see you, Kitty.
He's conscious?
Oh, sure, he has been all morning, since about dawn. Of course, he slept some since then.
He's going to be all right, Doc.
Kitty?
Uh-oh, there's your answer. Let's go back and see him.
Hello, Matt.
That's nice of you to come by, Kitty.
I was going to make you some soup or something, but I thought I'd see what you wanted first.
Oh, good. You know, that's been worrying me, Kitty. I was hoping somebody would come by in time to keep me from being poisoned by Doc's cooking here.
Oh, poisoned by Doc's... Oh, you watch what you're saying, Matt. I could decide you're too sick to eat. Yeah, I could. I could keep you starved for weeks.
It wouldn't be worth it to you, Doc. Not with me taking up your bed the whole time.
How long will he be in bed, Doc?
Oh, maybe 10 days.
5 will do it.
I said 10.
I'll make you a bet, Doc.
You ought to rest, Matt. Especially with your arm hurt. You wouldn't dare go out to use it again.
I hear Grat killed another man last night.
Some stranger. They say Grat slapped him and then shot him down. Just like that.
And he was standing real close to him.
Why? What's that got to do with it?
Now, Grat's the fastest man I ever saw, Kitty. And that's his weakness.
What do you mean?
It makes him overconfident. He draws and shoots so fast, most men haven't got a chance. Like Sheriff Hill. He didn't even shoot back.
Well, how's that a weakness?
Well, Grant was lucky with Hill. But with me, a fraction of an inch, and he'd have missed entirely. And if he had, I'd have killed him. No, it's simple, Kitty. He doesn't take time to shoot straight. He doesn't think he has to. And he'll die for that someday.
Matt.
Yeah?
You're not going to face him again.
As soon as I'm able to.
You can't, with that arm.
Gratz is sure of himself. He might not even notice my arm.
What do you mean? He already knows about it.
He does?
What?
He'll see, Kitty. When the time comes. Awful mad, but 5 days later I got up. And then for the next week I spent every day down by the river, drawing and shooting. Drawing and shooting for hours on end. Doc told me I'd have a headache and the gunfire didn't help ease it, but I kept on. Grant found a fight and killed another man while I was at it. And I guess that spurred me some. Finally, I'd had enough. And I went into the office one noon where Chester was waiting for me.
I declare, Mr. Dillon, your arm won't never heal if you keep working it so hard.
Oh, my arm's in fine shape, Chester.
I don't see how it could be.
And I'm hoping Grat won't see how it could be either.
I don't understand, Mr. Dillon.
Grat's so sure of himself, I'm gambling he won't notice it.
Notice what?
My gun.
Your gun? What? Why? You're wearing it in your belt, Mr. Dillon. What'd you do with your holster?
It's hanging on the wall over there, Chester, where it's been all week.
Well, forevermore. It's easier on your arm drawing it from your belt, is that it?
Well, that's part of it, Chester. Have you seen Grant today?
Yes, sir. This morning, over at the Alapaganza, playing Pharaoh.
Yeah. All right, Chester. Go find him. will you?
Yes, sir. But what'll I tell him?
Tell him that, I'm going to arrest him about sundown. Let's say 5 o'clock. And I'll start looking for him in the plaza. That way the word will get around and nobody but us will get hurt.
Mr. Dillon, it just gives me the jumps for us to be sitting out here all alone. Ain't hardly 5 o'clock yet, and Dodge already looks like a ghost town. Ain't one person here in the plaza.
I can see a few heads peeking out here and there, Chester.
Vultures, that's what they are, waiting for somebody to die. Sorry, Mr. Dillon, I didn't...
Somebody usually does die in a gunfight, Chester.
It ain't fair. You with a bad arm... Can't you wait a while, Mr. Dillon?
No. Gratz killed too many men already. No, I've waited long enough.
Well, I'll fight him. By golly, I will. I'll fight him.
You would, wouldn't you, Chester?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Chester, get out of the way now.
No.
You heard me, Chester.
Yes, sir.
All right. That's far enough, Gratz.
I was just going to shake hands with you, Marshal.
What?
Before I kill you. You're a brave man, Marshal. I shot you down once and you're back even before you're well. You're either brave or you're crazy.
Doesn't matter, does it?
No. I'll kill you anyway.
You're pretty sure of that, aren't you, Greg?
Why shouldn't I be? I already know I can outdraw you, even without your arm being bad.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You can.
Never saw a man wanted to die so much as you do. What's the matter with you, Marshal? Wait a minute. You ain't wearing a gun.
It's stuck in my belt.
Oh, yeah. Well, that'll make it even easier, won't it?
Let's find out, Gratz.
You've got him, Mr. Dillon. You got him.
Yeah.
You hit him all 3 shots. I could see every one of them.
Well, that took more time than he did. And he took plenty. But he was too sure of himself, Justin. And that's what I was counting on.
He drawed first, though.
Yeah, he wasn't in any hurry this time, Chester. He knew I couldn't do much with a bad arm.
Well, he was sure wrong. You killed him with it.
You don't see any better than he did, Chester.
What?
The gun in my belt, Chester. The butt's pointing to the left. That's going to be weeks before I can use my right arm again.
Why, golly, that's right, yeah. You use your left hand.
It wasn't until I started to draw that he noticed it. And when he did, it gave me an extra second. And it cost him his life.
transcribed under the direction of Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Tonight's story was specially written for Gunsmoke by John Meston, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Featured in the cast were Vic Perrin, Paul Dubov, Harry Bartell, and John Daner. Harley Bear is Chester, Howard McNair is Doc, and Georgia Ellis is Kitty. Join us again next week as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal, fights to bring law and order out of the wild violence of the West in Gunsmoke. Hear Gunsmoke every Saturday, this same time, this same station. Hear the great new Perry Como radio show every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, also on CBS Radio.
This is the CBS Radio Network.
What makes this episode so different is that it was so dark. They wanted to show us right away that this Western was not going to be another Hopalong Cassidy. Matt knows what he must do and sets about trying to figure out how to do it. In fact, those early days of both the television show and the radio show were dark. The TV episodes opened with Matt wandering among the headstones on Boot Hill, observing the Gomorrah of the Plains, Dodge City, in the distance. Matt would reflect on the times, about his city, and his role in it all, allowing us to get into the mind of a hero. Truly a show ahead of its time. Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's roundup of stories. It was kind of nice hearing an OTR tale again. I want to thank our contributors for this week, Greg Surratt and my brother Jim, who are both from the Land of Enchantment. Mason Henry Blue, you are an amazing fella. And of course, who could forget Miss Emily? If you want to follow the podcast or the blog, it's easy to do. Just head to ronsamazingstories.com. There you're going to find all of the links you'll need. We are on Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, TuneIn, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and many other services. Pick one and do leave some feedback about the show. It really does help us to grow. Thank you for listening, and I hope you come again to find out what are Ron's Amazing Stories.
All of the vintage audio used in the podcast is believed to be in the public domain. Ron's Amazing Stories does not own the rights to any of the old-time radio used here. If you hold the rights to any of the shows played, please contact us immediately at ronsamazingstories.com.